All right, y'all, welcome back. So, it's Anti-War Radio. Our next guest is Jason Leopold of truthout.org. And, boy, has he got something else for you today. Exclusive. From hopeful immigrant to FBI informant. The inside story of the other Abu Zubaydah. Welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
Hey, Scott. Great to be back with you.
Good, good. Very happy to have you here. Very interesting story. I think you say it took you a year or more to write because of waiting on documents and all these kinds of things. Lots of time to flesh out the narrative here. This is the story of the brother of Abu Zubaydah, and you and I have discussed him on the show before.
Yes.
He's the guy that Bush said was the reason why torture was justified, was because of people like him, and then it turned out that actually he was more of a travel agent and less of a terrorist mastermind. I'll let you address that if you want. But then here's his brother, who doesn't even really know this guy, hasn't seen him in I'm not sure how long. He's living the American dream, has his own life, everything's fine over here. Until September 11th happens, and then the government's just been treating him unfairly ever since, is basically the narrative that you spin here. And I'll go ahead and be as quiet as I can. I'll jump in when I think I need to as you tell the story here, Jason.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is you pretty much captured it. And, you know, in terms of to address your first question, yes. I mean, the government claimed that Abu Zubaydah was was involved in the 9/11 attacks. It was, the torture program was built around him. He makes an appearance in the August 6, 2001 presidential daily brief, Bin Laden determined to strike in the U.S. And he's also in a torture memo. Yet Abu Zubaydah kind of remains somewhat of a mystery. I mean, people are not as familiar with his name and how important of a figure he is as they are with, say, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, you know, the self-professed mastermind of 9/11. So it was during the course of research into Abu Zubaydah that, I was conducting that I stumbled across a comment. And it was a comment on the blog of on Andy Worthington, a Guantanamo reporter, his blog that was left by someone named Hesham Abu Zubaydah. And basically the comment said, I have been jailed. Do you think it's fair that I've been jailed for 2 years for, in Oregon for crimes, that my brother committed? I was stunned. First of all, I was stunned because it said Oregon. So that obviously, meant that, if this was the person who he said he was, that he was here in the United States. So I had originally tried to track him down because I wanted to put a profile together on Abu Zubaydah to basically address the same questions that that you raised about what the Bush administration said. I mean, everything that we know about Abu Zubaydah basically comes from some government source. That's it. Whether it's the FBI, the CIA. That's as far as we've gotten. So I was hoping that Hesham could provide a bit more insight. Maybe he knew about his brother's alleged terrorist activities, and perhaps he could tell me, what kind of person he is. I mean, I was just curious, to find that out. And certainly, what is this about him being in jail? So I tracked him down. He lives in Florida. And after speaking with him for about a week, it certainly, it occurred to me that this guy, this person, the younger brother of Abu Zubaydah, has his own remarkable, what I found it to be a remarkable story to tell. And so for the past year, I have been working on that. And he not only faced issues with regard to being collateral damage as a result of 9/11 and who his brother is, but then he was later recruited by the FBI to work as an informant and to spy on mosques in Portland, Oregon, where he was living at the time. One particular mosque that has been under surveillance by the FBI for at least a decade Masjid al-Sabr. I'm probably mangling the name, but that is the mosque. That is where the Portland 7, that's the mosque of Portland 7 attended. These were individuals who, you know, went to Afghanistan to, you know, fight against U.S. military and federal prosecutors and the FBI claimed they were funded by the imam at the mosque. So, you know, it's a remarkable story about two brothers, one who was allegedly, you know, trying to destroy America and the other who is, you know, dead set on pursuing the American dream. And that's Hisham. And
yeah. Well, and he apparently hates his brother's guts for all the grief he's had to put up with.
Yeah, he has mixed emotions about his brother. And, you know, first, let me just say this. He has not seen his brother. By the time the FBI agents knocked on his door, presented him with a set of photographs and said, "Do you know this person?" And the person in the photographs was his brother. He hadn't seen him for more than a decade, okay? His brother, who is referred to in my story as Hani, Hani being the alleged terrorist, that's the nickname his father gave him. It's also the name that Ali Soufan used when he was interrogating him. He hadn't seen him. The last time he saw him, Hisham was about 12 or 13 years old. He was going through chemotherapy at the time. He was he had testicular cancer as a child, and Hani had already left. You know, left home, was supposed to be attending college in India. So the FBI agents knocked on his door, presented him with these photographs. He had no idea who this person was, and because his memory, the last memory he has of his brother, is certainly not the first of all, it's not the alleged terrorist. And the person looked far different than, the individual in the photograph. So,
well, that comes up time and again in this article, and I was going to ask you anyway, so I'll go ahead and ask it now. Was there any doubt to you? Is there significant doubt cast on whether the Abu Zubaydah that the Americans have is who they say he is, or that there's any actual discrepancy here, or is it just that, the brother just hasn't seen him in so long that he might as well not be his brother, kind of thing?
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt at all that that we have the person known as Abu Zubaydah. The last memory that he has of him is of a teenager who wore jeans, who shaved, who was someone who used to play keyboards. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have a memory of someone who has a beard, a mustache. It just didn't look like his brother. And keep this in mind, Scott, that the person in the photograph, this is the photograph that was widely distributed. It's his passport photograph. The person in the photograph looks far different than the person who was captured on March 28, 2002 in Pakistan. So even CIA, when they captured him that evening, they were unsure that they had the right guy because he looked different.
But you even say in here that they got DNA from the brother to compare and make sure.
That's right. Yeah.
They had the same doubts.
They swabbed his mouth.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'm sorry that we got to take this break here, Jason,
sure,
and come back on the other side with this great story. It's the story of Hisham Zubaydah, the brother of Abu Zubaydah. Oh, no. What an unfortunate thing to happen to somebody. What an unfortunate thing to be. We'll be right back with Jason Leopold after this. All right, y'all, welcome back. It's Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton. I'm talking with Jason Leopold from truthout.org. His exclusive from hopeful immigrant to FBI informant. The inside story of the other Abu Zubaydah is right there on the front page at truthout.org. An incredible story. Very long and well written and worth it. All right, so now We're talking about Abu Zubaydah's brother. He lived in the United States. He had some trouble with his first wife, I guess, and then they used that against him to thwart his attempt to get citizenship and all these things. So then they promised him if he would become a snitch, they would help him get his green card and then his citizenship, but then that never happened. Something like this. Where'd we leave off? What are we talking about?
He came to the U.S. in 1998. Trying to pursue the American dream. He came here on a student visa, supposed to attend school in Florida, but he never did. So he was, after 9/11, picked up and charged with violating his student visa. And if you recall, right after 9/11, Scott, Ashcroft
rounded up thousands of people.
Sweep, yes.
Yeah.
And one of the individuals who was caught up in that was actually a cousin of Heshgam and his family, Maher Zubaydah, which nobody knew about, and he was one that that was arrested. He's actually someone that was in the photographs that the FBI showed Hisham and said, "Do you recognize any of these individuals?" And he said, "Oh, that's my cousin." So the issues with his first wife came into play, and they were serious because it involved domestic violence. They got into an altercation. He hit her. She hit him. She called the cops. He was arrested. And it wasn't until after he was arrested after 9/11 where you started to really see how the FBI and even U.S. attorneys were sort of micromanaging his case. They wanted to keep him locked up, and in federal custody and immigration, where he was in solitary, and basically mine him for as much information as possible. When we left off, it was we were talking about whether
the positive identification there.
Yeah. They eventually, FBI interrogators eventually went in, and said, "You are lying to us. That is your brother in the photograph. And we caught him in Pakistan. And, would you object to doing a DNA test?" So they swabbed his mouth. And then, it's another new detail. And
you could see how they might be angry and assume that he didn't mean well when he said, "I can't identify the man in the picture," being the cops that they are and everything.
Yeah, no, you could absolutely see that and certainly understand it. But he was interrogated for months and months and months. And eventually, I'll look at this as simply a coincidence. The same day that his brother was captured in Pakistan, an immigration judge ordered Hisham to be deported. And, he's a citizen of Saudi Arabia, but he's not, he's resident of Saudi Arabia, but he's not a citizen. He's of Palestinian descent. So he can never be a citizen. So deporting him to Saudi Arabia was just, even though that's what the judge ordered, it wasn't an option. They tried to deport him to Yemen, to Morocco, to Egypt. No country would take him because of the fact that he was stateless. And so he ended up staying in immigration jail for ICE custody for another 2 years. And then after he was released, he's trying to basically get on with his life and still really, trying to obtain these citizenship papers. And he started a business. He met a new woman, got married. They had a kid. One of his business partners said, "There's someone I'd like to introduce you to." And it was an FBI agent. And this FBI agent basically recruited him with the promise of, working on his case or working on his, helping him obtain citizenship in the United States. And he worked for the FBI for 2 years. But it became clear that, I shouldn't say it became clear. The FBI certainly wanted to get as much info as they possibly could from, I'm sure, many of their informants about one particular mosque in Portland, which I mentioned earlier, Masjid al-Sabr. But they kept mining him for information about his brother. And he said, "Look, I don't know anything about my brother. We haven't seen the guy, at this point for, 15 years. I don't know anything about him.
This point, he's been in custody for years, tortured in Poland and God knows Thailand, everywhere else.
Exactly. And, you know, he wasn't transferred to Guantanamo yet. So, and I need to point out that, you know, one of the other new revelations here is that there were three phone calls.
I mean, that does seem strange, right? That they're still questioning him about him as though they're looking for him and this is going to help them find him or something like that.
It does seem strange. You know, what's really curious, one of the questions that I asked Scott was, you know, why didn't the FBI speak to Hisham before 9/11? You mentioned 9/11, first of all, and all the, I'm not trying to, it gets into, you know, people, you know, use it for whatever reason. I'm simply just, it's a legitimate question. Why didn't they question him before 9/11? Why didn't they, if Zubeda was under surveillance, which our government says he was, why didn't they question him? Instead of questioning him, Hisham, they actually questioned his wife. 3 weeks before 9/11, two FBI agents show up at his house. And
as you mentioned previously, his name was in the PDB, the daily brief of George Bush from August the 6th, 2001.
Right. Right. And 2 weeks after that, you know, the FBI is questioning, you know, Hisham. A U.S. official tells me that, oh, we were trying to make attempts to call, to contact him, but 9/11 happened. You know, the reason I bring this up, Scott, is because another new detail in the story is that there were three telephone calls that, Hisham's brother, Hani, you know, the alleged terrorist, made to the U.S. in April of 2000. Those phone calls, have never been revealed before. And at that time, he was already under surveillance due to this failed Millennium plot to, you know, blow up sites in Jordan and the U.S.
LAX.
So he was already under surveillance. So these phone calls, it was supposedly known, obviously, to the FBI, at least immediately after 9/11. But it was not shared with the 9/11 commission or the 9/11, congressional inquiry. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't appear anywhere. And again, the reason I bring that up is because, you know, if they were monitoring him, why didn't they make those calls? Yep. And, or make that visit to him? So, you know, so basically he has been living and paying the high price for his brother's crimes for more than a decade. It got to the point where in 2010, you know, FBI agents, he stopped working for the FBI. He moves to Florida and they continue to visit him. They track him down. Finally, they hand him a subpoena. They want him to testify against his brother. There's a propaganda type videotape that's out there, where his brother, you know, appears in it, and they wanted him to travel to a grand jury in Richmond, Virginia, and testify and tell the grand jury that that is my brother in that videotape, which he was unsure of. And he said that, I don't think that's him. That testimony, you know, he kept saying that that was what they were telling him. This was the trial of his brother. But the videotape was actually used in the war crimes trial of Noor Uthman Mohammed, who pled guilty. He was captured on the same night Hani, the, you know, alleged terrorist, was. Mm-hmm. So it really seemed that they were grooming him for this testimony. They were, you know, stringing him along. They had him doing some work for the FBI. For the past decade, you know, this guy has been, you know, paying a high price, totally mistreated. And, you know, unfortunately didn't get into the whole point of the, you know,
I think you're going to say there, he failed to do what they wanted in front of the grand jury. They ignored his history of failing to be able to identify his brother from pictures these days.
Right.
And so now they're angry at him, and now his chances for citizenship are all but scotched completely, right? Is that the point?
That's pretty much the point. And, you know, I asked for his case files, and when I asked the FBI for his case files, under a Freedom of Information Act request, the FBI responded by sending an agent, a field agent, out to his house to talk to him about it, to find out what he told me, whether I coerced him, whether...
Right,
you know,
that's the whole sidebar article there at truthout.org.
Yes.
That's not the kind of thing that happens very much, right? They came, they said, are you sure you want this journalist to have your FBI file?
Right.
Yes.
Right. And
he says, yeah, of course I'm sure.
Yeah, and I have a copy of that report posted on the story where people could, you know, download it, read it, certainly see my name in there, and, you know, open government experts said this is unprecedented. So, you know, in a nutshell, it's you know, the story of two brothers, you know, one, you know, waging violent jihad, allegedly, and the other, you know, pursuing the American dream, but, you know, paid a terrible price as a result of 9/11 and became collateral damage.
Yep. All right. Well, it's all there. It's some great journalism. Congratulate you on it. It's truthout.org. Jason Leopold with an exclusive from hopeful immigrant to FBI informant, the inside story of the other Abu Zubaydah, that is Hesham Abu Zubaydah, brother of the world-renowned tortured terrorist acquaintance. Anyway, thanks very much, Jason. Really appreciate it, as always.
I appreciate it, Scott. Thank you. Take care.